I like this boy, Lyndon Johnson. He's one of the most promising young men I've ever met. He reminds me of me. These words from Franklin Roosevelt capture the extraordinary magnetism of a gangly, ambitious Texan who would transform American politics. The story of Lyndon Johnson's rise from poverty to power reveals how ruthless political instincts are forged in the crucible of hardship. His journey from the harsh Texas Hill Country to the corridors of Washington shows not just how one man acquired power, but how that power would eventually reshape America itself. What drives someone to pursue power with such single-minded determination? And at what cost does that ambition come, to the individual and to those around them? The Texas Hill Country, a deceptive paradise of rolling hills and streams, broke those who tried to tame it. The Johnson family briefly prospered during cattle booms before losing nearly everything. As intellectuals and dreamers, they struggled in a land that demanded pragmatism. The Johnsons were distinct, favoring political discourse over farming talk. Sam Johnson Sr. read Austin newspapers when few did. This intellectual focus proved costly. By Lyndon's father's birth in 1877, the family's fortunes had collapsed. Sam Jr. later followed suit, finding brief political success before losing everything on cotton speculation. By the 1920s, the Johnson name meant failure. Lyndon's parents were a study in contrasts. Sam Johnson was rough-hewn and politically passionate, while Rebecca Baines Johnson, from Old Money, brought refinement and culture. They found common ground in their political ideals, particularly their admiration for William Jennings Bryan. Rebecca faced Hill Country isolation with dignity, making rituals out of little things like serving tea in fine cups. Though Sam would playfully tease her about her ancestry, their warmth couldn't prevent his eventual downfall. As Sam's fortunes crumbled in the early 1920s, young Lyndon watched his father's proud Johnson strut become an object of ridicule, leading him to reject his parents' values. Lyndon displayed leadership tendencies from his earliest years. At 18 months, he would confidently visit relatives alone, showing remarkable maturity. With peers, he was naturally dominant, insisting on riding in front on his cousin's donkey, leading all activities, and using his baseball as leverage to control games. By age 10, he preferred adult company, particularly at the barber shop, where he'd read the newspaper first and discuss current events with grown men. Politics became his passion, nurtured by his father Sam, who organized formal debates at the dinner table and engaged in lengthy political discussions with Lyndon on their back porch. Father and son grew strikingly similar in appearance and mannerisms, including their habit of close physical proximity during conversations. However, neighbors noted a key difference. While Sam's intensity masked genuine friendliness, Lyndon's drive stemmed from a need to dominate. His emotional responses were intense, wailing dramatically after being spanked at age 10 and crying publicly after losing fights in his teens. Yet he showed remarkable charm with adults, especially women, manipulating them to get his way in ways that amazed his peers. At Southwest Texas State Teachers College, Johnson quickly engineered his ascent. Within weeks, he created a position as President Evans' office boy and secured a role writing for the campus newspaper, where he strategically praised college officials. His calculated flattery extended to professors, though students resented his self-serving behavior toward them. Johnson's political strategy was defined by secrecy. Despite his typical boastfulness, he maintained absolute discretion about political maneuvers. His campus organization operated under strict rules: no visible group conversations, hidden meeting locations, and members could deny involvement if questioned. In just over a year, Johnson, though widely disliked, had masterfully created and manipulated the campus political structure, foreshadowing his future command of Washington's power dynamics. Johnson's teaching experience in Cotulla, a desolate South Texas town near the Mexican border, revealed another dimension of his character. He transformed education for his Mexican-American students through dedicated teaching, demanding excellence, and staying after school with struggling students. He consistently told them that through education, any baby might grow up to become president. While this passion partly stemmed from his desire to be respected, Johnson's commitment was genuine despite occasional displays of insecurity, like having students sing songs praising him. Years later, as president, he reflected, "I shall never forget the faces of the boys and the girls in that little Wellhausen Mexican school, and I remember even yet the pain of realizing and knowing then that college was closed to practically every one of those children because they were too poor. And I think it was then that I made up my mind that this nation could never rest while the door to knowledge remained closed to any American." This formative experience laid the groundwork for Johnson's later civil rights and education initiatives, revealing how genuine compassion for the disadvantaged coexisted with his ruthless ambition. When Congressman James Buchanan died in 1937, Johnson launched an audacious campaign for the vacant seat. While his opponents delayed, Johnson had already toured the entire district before the election date was even set. Though formal speeches weren't his strength, Johnson excelled in personal interactions. His face would light up with warmth, and his remarkable memory for names helped forge instant connections with voters, often through shared acquaintances. His campaign centered on one message: Roosevelt, 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 100% for Roosevelt. This slogan dominated his materials as he positioned the special election as voters' first chance to support Roosevelt's judicial reform plan. Johnson's intensity was unmatched. He insisted on meeting every voter, even in the most remote areas. As his cousin noted, he went to the people that no one had ever gone to. He went to the people on the forks of the creeks. This relentless approach would become his political trademark. Pearl Harbor delayed Johnson's Senate ambitions by 7 years. When he ran again in 1948, his platform had shifted dramatically. Once the perfect Roosevelt man with 100% support for the New Deal, Johnson had aligned with Texas's conservative establishment. By 1948, he openly attacked big labor racketeers and communist union leaders, a reversal from his first Senate campaign. Even the conservative Dallas Chamber of Commerce endorsed him as satisfactorily conservative. This shocked liberal supporters, but as his roommates noted, Lyndon goes which way the wind blows. Johnson's talent for adapting to changing political environments became his hallmark. This political flexibility helped him navigate both Texas and national politics masterfully. His defining traits persisted: relentless ambition, cultivation of powerful mentors, unmatched work ethic, and ability to inspire both fierce loyalty and bitter resentment. The young man who declared he would become president had begun his transformative journey.